MD, RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty Parmigiano? We got a special great show today here on Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. I am Dr. Mike. It's time for culinary CPR with my cohort in the kitchen, Chef Luca Parrish. You know him, you love him. You can't live without him. He was actually born in Italy, grew up in New York City, has been in the food business his entire life, graduated from Johnson & Wales, went on to, you know, rock the culinary world, so to speak. He's been restaurateur of the year. He's kicked butt on Food Network. I think Guy Fieri is still calling him up for some kitchen tips every now and again. That's pretty much how it happens, right? Right? Isn't you get a call a week from him, right, Luca?
Yeah, I don't know about that, man, but that's okay.
Sure. Kind of got to roll with it, man. So today we are doing something that is so common. I mean, it's got its own catchphrase, right? We're talking about a Parmigiana here on Culinary CPR, and we all know chicken parm, you taste so good. So tell me about a parm. What is a Parmigiana?
Well, you know what? Going back, I mean, when you brought up talking about this topic, I was like, whoa, this is a no-brainer. I mean, I live chicken, veal, eggplant, Parmigiana. It's everywhere, and it's really incredible because the history of the Parmigiana, the eggplant Parmigiana, because, all right, so we got to start from the beginning. Italy's broken down into a bunch of different regions, like the United States or states. Italy has its regions, Piemonte, Parma, and all these different ones associated. There's Umbria, Tuscany, or Toscana, all the regions. Now, eggplant Parmigiana and a lot of Italian.
Can I just say that? Just saying the regions of Italy makes me hungry.
You know,
I mean, you just ran through that list, and I was like, why am I getting hungry? But, the places sound delicious.
Here's the thing. When you think of a lot of Italian food, they're named after regions of Italy. So when you think of or towns or whatever, Bolognese is a meat ragu from Bologna. Insalata caprese is a salad of mozzarella and tomato that was originated in the island off the island of Capri. So while you're hungry, veal Milanese comes from Milano. Why you get hungry is because the Italians put all their cities and their regions behind their on their food names, and automatically you can't think of Italy without thinking food. See, we got
that's
you.
Just like genius. That's genius marketing. That's the best marketing ever. It is. It's as brilliant as, like, you know, if you ever take your kids, folks, to Disney World, Disneyland. I think I was the first. It's not only the happiest place on earth. It's obviously the most expensive because after you get off every ride, you can only exit the ride through a gift shop that deals with all the things that your six-year-old just saw and is saying, oh, you know, I've got to have this. I've got to have that now. So the Italians are like the Disney of food marketing.
They food market like nobody's business. And actually, you know, we could get into a whole, we could make this into four different shows because the concept of the way the Italians have sold food over the years and the high quality food they sold in the different types of packaging. You know, when you think of buying packaged cold cuts in the United States, you know, pre-sliced cold cuts in these vacuum packed, people look at it and go, why? I can't buy that. That's no good. The Italians have been putting amazing prosciutto di Parma, which is some of the best prosciutto in the world, sliced in packaging because they figured out how to do it right. Mozzarella di bufala travels thousands of miles every day from southern Italy to the United States and different parts of the world, and is served at restaurants, and it's amazing. Now, we'll talk about another show. We'll talk about how to make mozzarella at home and the difference between buffalo mozzarella and that.
Yeah, it's got its own world. There's no comparison. We got to do that.
So just getting back to the history of Parma or Parmigiano, Parma is a region in Italy, right? So whenever you like Parmigiano cheese comes from Parma, it's specific to that area. You can't make Parmigiano. You can't call it Parmigiano without coming from there. Other than that, it's a Parmesan style cheese. You know, if you get that from the United States, it's they'll call it Parmesan, but it's not Parmigiano like you get in Italy. Now, there's a couple of different histories about the eggplant or the it starts off with eggplant parmigiano, which eggplant was originally a southern Italian grown vegetable. And Sicily, and then right off, well, that would be Sicily would be its own island, but also in the southern boot part of Italy, they grew a lot of eggplant. Now, they made this dish where you would have fried eggplant, some type of cheese, and it could have been something regional as well, but mozzarella comes into play a lot here. Okay. And then a red sauce. So that's what we think of when we do a chicken parm or an egg parm or veal parm or whatever. Yeah. So, but there are a lot of, where did the word parmigiano come from? Was it really parmigiano? So is it something that they did up north? Nowhere in northern history is this kind of layered casserole that is exactly like the eggplant parmesan that comes from the south. Now, there's one thing that said there's damigiana in Italian. It's that wicker sleeve you put on a wine bottle, kind of keeps it cold.
Oh, yeah.
That is a damigiana. They think that maybe that was a reason. It's also used along, they would put it on a casserole bottom, too, so your hands don't get, you don't burn your hands. Oh, okay. So you have this damigiana. So maybe it was called eggplant damigiana, and we kind of bastardized it like we do everything else when we when we take care of words. So you change it around and it became parmigiana. You know, it could Americanize that fast, or even over the time change. So, but the idea is it's a casserole of a vegetable, because you could do any vegetable. You could do a zucchini, you could do eggplant, you could do squash, you could, you know, if anything that you could fry will go great. And then a sauce, the tomato sauce, and everyone's mom's tomato sauce in Italy is always the best one. And then the cheese, whether it's parmigiano and mozzarella together, some fresh basil. And some of the traditional recipes also had hard-boiled egg slices, which we don't see very much anymore. If you go really back in time, you'll get some of those.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, and it's a real old-world type concept. Now, with all that being said, the most important thing, and you said it to me and a lot of people tell me all the time, is why is someone's eggplant parmigiana just amazing, and then why does somebody else's taste like mush? Because of the eggplant. And that's the simplest thing to do. Now, I'm a huge fan of a lot of these Food Network chefs and then these, you know, famous culinary masters out there. And one of them...
Well, you should be. You're one of them.
I wish. But one of them is Mario Batali. And I've seen him make eggplant parmigiana. Now, I saw him make it once, and I cringed a little bit. And, you know, that's a lot. I mean... Because I think my mom makes it a little better, and that's how I learned it, so I'll go there. But he leaves the skin on, and now some people leave it on, but I found the skin really, really bitter, first of all. Me too.
And did he do anything to, you know, sometimes they talk about, well, you know, we'll soak it or we'll do this or that. Because I'm like you, I just find, you know, even when I char the eggplant, you know, and I'll char the skin and occasionally I'll leave a little bit of that charred skin on, you know, when I've cooked it in the ash for that flavor, but otherwise it's just too bitter for me.
It's just a bitter, you know, of course the older the eggplant, the more bitter it would be, people do talk about soaking or salting it overnight or, so you could take some of the, and then letting it drip and then you lose some of the bitterness. I have never made a bitter eggplant parmigiano. All I do is peel the eggplant, no matter how old it is or, you know, how long I've had it, as long as it's still good, of course. But so I peel the eggplant so we get rid of the skin, and then I slice it very thin. I think this is the big key. Slicing it thin, and then...
Are we talking quarter inch, eighth inch?
Yeah, I think you're talking a quarter inch and maybe a little bit less, but you don't want it paper thin where you're just going to cut.
Okay.
You're going to cut it and you're going to leave holes, you know? I mean, it, too thick is no good because even the frying process of cooking it too thick, you're not cooking the inside, and it's too. That's where you get that kind of rubberiness or that mushiness. So then it's just the flour, egg, breadcrumb technique. That's the important part, and you season all three: flour, salt, and pepper. Done.
I'm going to interrupt and pick your brain about breadcrumbs, because a lot of times you'll say, okay, well, we don't use Italian style breadcrumbs. We're just going to use panko. We're going to use this or that. I'll tell you what I do, but I want to hear first what you do, because you're the Parmesan expert.
Well, I mean, okay, so there's this, the, my grandmother in me will tell you that if I have a whole bunch of old bread around, I'm not getting rid of it, first of all, because wasting is probably the biggest sin you could commit in any Italian kitchen. So you take your old bread, you toast it all together, and you pulse it in a Roboku or in a processor, and then you sift it through so you have this really fine breadcrumb. I believe in fine breadcrumb. I don't like panko because it's too big. So if I use, okay, if I'm using panko or any type of breadcrumb, I always put it in a food processor with my other ingredients. So my flavoring, if you like to use dry herbs, you can. I like using fresh parsley, some fresh thyme. Those are simple, and you could put anything you want in there. I stay away from the really heavy woodsy herbs. I don't usually use rosemary in this dish. It doesn't seem to fit for me. But thyme and parsley, you can use a little bit of basil, but I'd rather see some fresh basil as a garnish than in the breadcrumb. So and then I put
that's
cheese.
That's a great tip for folks. It's a great way. And this is why you're such a genius in the kitchen, Chef. You know, there's another sort of very subtle but just great way, folks, to build in another layer of flavor. I mean, just right there in the breading, that thyme, that parsley, that oregano, whatever you chop up, you know, just a little bit in there. It's going to make such a difference, I think, in the flavors and textures. And you just added another one by saying you were going to add a little bit of cheese in there. So these are great tips, whether you're doing a Parmigiano or it's just, you know, your basic breading for, you know, whatever you're cooking.
Oh, sure.
That's just a fabulous little tip right there. And now you mentioned you don't add anything to the egg. Do you add a little bit of water to your egg wash
I just do straight egg wash. I don't even have to add any water. I mean, it's just, I just mix up eggs. You can add a little bit of cream or water if you want, just I just never have. There are lots of schools of thought on both sides. It's always worked this way for me, just to go straight egg. If you add a little bit of milk or anything like that, it'll just stretch it a little further. Because you're really just going from dry to wet to dry again. It's just traditional breading method.
I'm like you. I don't add anything. And I particularly don't add milk or cream because it actually changes the proteins and the way the egg proteins will cook. And I don't really know that makes a difference per se in the breading, but it does if you're doing an omelet versus scrambled eggs.
Oh, really? Definitely. You know, without a doubt.
Yeah.
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 I mean,
so,
I would do that.
So I'm like you.
Yeah. And so it's worked this way. Now, with the breadcrumb itself, it's you flavor the way you want. If you want to, you know, of course, some salt and pepper, the herbs, the cheese to the breadcrumb ratio. I usually do like a 3-part breadcrumb to 1-part cheese. I like a good amount of cheese. We could talk another time. I do a breading that's 1-to-1 cheese to breadcrumb ratio. But you have to be really careful when you fry or you pan fry because you could burn the cheese. But it's so amazing. It gives chicken parm or chicken cutlets or veal cutlets a whole different world. So
you're almost getting like a part. You could almost get like a Parmesan crisp, you know, flavor texture.
Exactly.
You know, on your breast. And that just sounds once again, folks, that is not the earth trembling. That's just my stomach because I'm talking to Luca. So that's what you're hearing when, you know, rumbling in the background. Because I was like, wow, that sounds really, really good. And is that the kind of cheese you usually add to your breadcrumbs? A Parmigiano or?
Yeah, I use Parmigiano. I generally use that all the time now because Lindy doesn't like Romano cheese. And so there are the two types of cheese. Parmigiano comes from northern Italy. Romano comes from exactly what you're thinking, the Roman area, And Pecorino Romano, that's because it's a sheep's milk cheese, has a little bit more bite to it and some more flavor. So if you do a blend of the two, it's a wonderful combination of cheeses to use in your eggplant or into any parm dish.
What about Asiago?
Asiago?
Yeah.
Asiago, if you get it dry enough, a grating Asiago is a good one.
Yes.
You don't want your cheese to be too moist. That's
okay.
A big key. You want to make sure your breadcrumb is still a fine, dry breadcrumb. But Asiago is a great cheese. Anything that's a good grating cheese will go great in this dish.
Okay.
So, and I like Asiago. I love the flavor of it. But there are some that are not quite as dry. So be careful with what you do, you know, the type of Asiago you use for there.
Right, those are generally the younger cheeses. So
exactly,
you know, if you're there with your, you know, at the cheese shop or something, and they've got the different ones out, if you're asking for the older aged cheeses. Those are going to be the ones with less moisture. They also, in my opinion, they tend to have a more concentrated kind of intense. And a lot of times you get what I really like with that, almost a nutty flavor for me.
Yes.
Those Italian dry cheeses that, I mean, you know, it's just unlike, like you said, you can't get that, you know, in a green canister.
That's breadcrumb. I mean, that's like, that's cardboard. So here's the thing too. Like, well, when we talk about things like that nutty flavor, when you talk about the true Parmigiano cheese, as it's been said, the king of all cheeses, Parmigiano Reggiano is a cheese aged for 3 years. In these beautiful, I can't even call them caves. They're now warehouses that are just amazing. But when you break into one, that's the first thing you get. You get this nutty aroma that just hits you like a brick, and it's just so beautiful. And then when you bite into it, you get just a little sparkle on the tongue from the cheese. And then and guess what I do with the rind? Did I ever tell you this? You know the rind of the Parmigiano cheese?
Yeah, I put them in my spaghetti sauce, in my red sauce.
Bam. There you go. I don't have to tell you.
Did I win something? Is that the right answer? Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But here's a minestrone soup or anything. It's perfect.
Oh, yum, yeah.
But have you ever tried to take a bite out of it afterwards, after it's been cooked like that?
No, I don't think I have it.
All right, so my sauces,
they dissolve.
When I was a kid, my mom would give us, my brother and I, because we did this once, we saw it there and we picked it up and I put everything in my mouth. I mean, I had to taste everything in the world. I think that's why I became a chef. But I remember trying it and it chews just like bubble gum. It's because the rind is so hard. And I was like, Mom, this is Parmigiano bubble gum. It's the best thing in the world. And since then, I've always chewed on Parmigiano. Anyway, nobody needs to know that ever. That was TMI, like the word.
Nobody will. You know, the thousands that are listening, folks, just keep that to yourself. You know, and that's a great thing. Look, there's nobody else listening. It's just you and I. So, you know, don't worry. Share all the secrets.
I've given up my deep, dark secrets. So we talked about the importance of the eggplant is slicing it thin, not too thin, but slicing it thin, taking the skin off. We talked about the importance of a fine breadcrumb that's been mixed together, because I actually, in the RoboCook, not only mixed the breadcrumb, but then I add the cheese into there, and I add my herbs into there and some salt, and I pulse it again into that food processor because I want it all integrated. I don't want to just mix it in by hand. By doing that, the flavor's everywhere, almost to a point. Sometimes if I put a lot of parsley, it'll have a green hue to it. But that's okay.
Oh, nice.
Because you're adding a ton of flavor. Now you do the egg wash method, you know, you go into flour first, then your egg.
I want to ask you because I've seen this step before too with the eggplants, where some people then will take the sections that you've cut. Now, do you cut them across so you get sort of disc, or do you cut them long is the first question. And the second part of that question then is, do you salt them? Because I've seen people talk about salting it and then leaving them sit for a while. Yeah. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So because I have a slicer, we have one of those big industrial slicers. Hmm. I go lengthwise because it just fills up more space. A longer egg, you're frying less. And so I don't think there's a big difference going round or long, whatever's easier for you. But because I have the slicer, it's easy for me to do it that way. And I do cases at a time when we do them here for the restaurant.
Wow.
The other thing is I never salt my eggplant. I have yet to do that. And I've never again had to worry about a bitter or, you know, the flavor. I mean, I have enough flavor in everything I have. And because they're thin enough, they come out absolutely perfect every time the way I do it. So, is there a basic reason that people salt? Do you think, is there something I'm missing?
Well, you know, so what I've heard, which I don't do it myself, but what I've seen, like you, I've watched a lot because we're really touching on something, particularly with the eggplant, where I don't know that there are a whole lot of other ingredients that we use, certainly common ingredients, where there is such a diversity of you know, attitudes of preparation, you know,
yes,
I mean, really extremes from one to the other. And so what I've heard is that it draws out some of the moisture is the idea behind it. And so that when you then cook it up, because, you know, the eggplant itself is a very moist, it's, you know, it's not like a butternut squash,
like a sponge.
You know, which is very dense. Yeah. So it really is. And one of the most interesting ways I ever fixed eggplant was I made eggplant fries. And actually, to do that, after I cut the eggplant into sort of sticks like you do for sweet potato fries or regular potato fries, was to actually then soak it in ice water, which was sort of the exact opposite of what one might think to get a crispy fry. And then we dusted them up, and then, you know, just quickly, very quickly fried them. And they were light and airy and crisp and incredibly delicious. But it was the opposite of what I've seen with these, some of these preps with the eggplant parmesan, which we talk about, and they say, no, salt it, and it draws it out. And then when you cook it up, it's crisp. So, you know, I think everybody's kind of all over the place on this.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm following your lead because I know how well you make it.
Well, I think that there might be some validity to that, especially if you're making them really thick. And you wanted to draw some moisture out, but because of the thinness of what we're doing and then the breading that we're going to be putting on it, I just don't think there's any reason to do an extra step that you don't need to. And these, they've always come out right. So I'm going to go with my idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm following your lead on this one.
So now we've gotten, you know, now we've fried them off. So whether you have this little fry basket at home or you pan fry them, either way works. Just make sure you don't crowd the pan when you fry. That's another thing you have to, you know, the frying technique is something that people need to develop as well with anything, whether you're frying chicken, eggplant, cutlets, anything. It's, you know, hot pan, hot oil, and then make sure you don't drop the temp of that pan too far down, which is putting too many items in, crowding them. Then you won't get a crispy fry when the oil temp drops, then your items or your eggplant are going to soak oil versus fry in oil. So you have to be really careful with that.
That's really important. You bring up a great point to you know, just pop on my stethoscope for a moment. That's one reason why folks who eat a lot of, you know, fried foods can end up ingesting a lot and an excess of essentially unhealthy levels of certain types of oils is not because they're necessarily having the fried food per se, but exactly what you brought up, which is the preparatory technique is poor, or they're at a restaurant that's very busy and they've let their oil temperature drop. And when you put the breaded food or whatever food in the oil, it should immediately seal on the outside, and the food actually sort of steams itself on the middle because it's got that shell. What happens when the oil temperature drops is oil actually goes into the food, and that's where you get greasy, sort of nasty, oily tasting food, and you ingest a lot of that oil. Whereas if you make sure that you follow your directions, don't over crowd that pan, don't let that oil temperature drop, obviously don't burn the food, what you find is that the food absorbs actually a very minuscule amount of that oil actually goes into the food. So I want to harp on what you said, because that technique is important not only for delicious food, but also to make healthy food, whatever oil, kind of oil you're cooking in, particularly though, if you're doing something in a pan with olive oil, for example, you know, which is a very flavorful oil. So that technique you bring up, man, you are spot on. That's a real important kind of health tip as well as a kitchen tip.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think to use one of your words, it's a fallacy sometimes to say that fried food's not good for you. I mean, everything in moderation is okay for you. Right. It's just how you do it. If you fry food incorrectly, you are going to get a big grease bomb in your stomach. And you'll notice it right away, because we've all had it, right? You ever have something fried and then 5 minutes later, that's all you just feel this big pit in your stomach from what you ate? Even if it was good.
Yeah, you, Usually, you know, I can't eat it because I'll take a bite and it's like, oh my God, this is, it's so greasy, and it's just, you know, so much oil overwhelms everything. And you bring up a great point too. You know, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, some fried items here and there on your plate. The problem is if you look at the modern Western diet, every item is fried.
And that's really the
problem. As you said, it's in the portion, it's in the moderation, it's in the mix. But you know, you want to have a little Parmesan, and you're having it on this wonderful salad, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, wonderful sauce, fresh cheeses. That's a good meal, in my opinion.
Well, you know what, Mike, we are running out of time for this one. I know we want to continue about this. I got two things for people: a summertime eggplant Parmesan I want to talk to you about. And then the most important ingredient on the Parmesan is mozzarella. And we should talk about that in another show, my friend.
Okay, so what we're doing here, folks, the first time ever on Code Delicious, we've got Summer's Bounty fresh from the garden. You're going to probably be able to find these eggplants and other squashes that Chef was talking about, like on discount at the farmer's market, because they're coming in abundance. So this is one way to use them up. And normally, I'd say, hey, until we meet again, you know, and you guys know my closing, but I'm going to hold on that. And I'm going to say instead, you know, stay tuned. And at the end of the next show, we're going to give you like two glasses of champagne. So hang in there. We're going to come back with, well, you say it. Say it in Italian for me, Luca. Parmigiano.
Oh, the secondo parte, the eggplant parmigiana con Dottore Mike e Luca.
Yeah, what he said, part two's coming up.